What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen opens the final segment of Common Sense, a five-part series composed of 16-year-old IB students from Rickards High School, examining today's political climate and the 2016 presidential election. The Common Sense team consists of four teens with diverse political affiliations, progressive, libertarians, Democrat, Republican. The Common Sense panel seek to maintain a substantive political dialogue, analyzing and evaluating national, state, and local politics of today. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and joining me, I welcome my team. Always looking forward to talking with them. We have Quinn Huckabee. Quinn is in the 11th grade. His things are science and international relations and dance.
Glad to be here.
Ollie Sanders. She is into foreign policy and music.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sarah Halbert. Sarah is into diplomacy, psychology, and art.
Hey
there. And Hannah Kiros. Hannah is a research and foreign policy. Those are her things.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Well, welcome. President-elect Donald Trump.
Yikes.
What was your response to that?
I listened.
Nobody can see you. Okay. People can't see your face, so you must share how you feel.
I listened to a lot of Christmas music the day after because it cheered me up. Because otherwise I would just start crying all the time, but it's cool.
I think it was really kind of disbelief. I didn't really expect it at all. I mean, I was kind of making light of him even the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see that he had that much impact on so many people was amazing.
Yeah.
So basically, I get most of my news from social media,
but
I checked it the morning after because I didn't want to know the night before, and I saw it and I just let out a huge sigh. I was just like, "Oh my gosh, you're kidding! April Fool's joke, please." But yeah, after that, it was just sort of like this weight on our shoulders still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh no, what are we gonna do? Like, here we are.
Well, here we are. We certainly are, and. Hannah, how did you respond?
I fell asleep on the couch watching the results. So Stanham was still on, and I woke up at like 5 a.m., and I saw his face on the screen and President-elect Donald Trump next to it. And it was just so surreal.
What kind of nightmare
and
is
just,
this?
Yeah, it felt very... I know this is, you know, my political bias, like informing the way that I viewed
sure.
it, but this is a... You know, that's
right.
I'm here to share
You're
my biases.
You can share your opinions
but
and your biases.
I'm a very strong believer in data. So it felt like a repudiation of just, I don't know, institutions and also just of what I thought to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it went against basically everything that established sources like the New York Times were telling me. And I know that the day after I like scoured the Washington Post and the New York Times for articles that would give me like an answer for just how to move on afterwards, because I think it made everything else that I believe to be like certain feel kind of tenuous, because I thought in no like reality
mm-hmm.
would this like
this
exist.
This couldn't
yeah.
happen. What do you think happened? How did this occur? I mean, yeah, go ahead.
I really didn't expect this, but I think that a lot of people that were voting out there this election cycle didn't really care about what the person said. They just wanted someone different.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for a lot of supporters of a lot of the different political candidates in this election, it didn't matter what the person said. They would still support that person because they weren't any of the other people.
Okay.
And so I think that kind of...
Go ahead. I mean, you know, you don't have to...
I think that, like... Hillary Clinton didn't really have a lot of success because she was running as a fear candidate. She was trying to say, if you don't vote for me, Donald Trump will win. And even though that's a scary enough
oh,
option,
okay.
I think that you can't... That fear is not a strong enough motivator to get people to vote for you. I think, even though I totally disagree with everything that people loved about Donald Trump, I think that, you know, at least they loved something in their candidate. At least they felt like they had something strong to fight for.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Hillary Clinton, I think a lot of people lacked motivation to really fight for her. I also think that Donald Trump did a really good job with targeting his supporters very locally. I think he kind of knew that his supporters were, like, rural white voters and, like, the working class up north. I think that he did a very good job of, like, targeting those supporters and going there instead of going to, like, bigger cities. Like, he went to Panama City and Tallahassee instead of, you know, other places that he could have gone that might have given him greater outreach, because he knew that those voters would be the ones to vote for him. And I think that Hillary Clinton didn't do that. I also think that she took a lot of voters for granted. I think that she thought that a lot of the voters that voted for Obama would vote for her just because she was a Democrat. And I think that her campaign did not do a great job estimating who would be voting.
Yeah. All right.
I think I agree with that, and I think Hillary Clinton relied on, you know, re-energizing the Obama coalition and getting them to, you know, turn out the vote. But I think it's a little bit unrealistic to expect minorities to show the same vigor for her as they did for the first African-American president. And
she was, I hate to interrupt you, but don't you think she was a poor candidate? I mean, she didn't inspire you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just want to throw that out there. Did you all find her inspiring? I mean, there was no fire.
Well, there weren't many hardcore Clinton supporters, you know? There were there were never Trump people, but there weren't very many hardcore, like, I love Clinton supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump had the hardcore supporters.
Mm-hmm. And she just didn't have the... She couldn't connect. She didn't have the charisma. You know,
and all her supporters said, "I'm with her," but not like, "I love her," or something.
Right.
Like, you just happen to be in that kind of situation.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, no. I think on that point, I understand that you want a leader that's charismatic and someone that, you know, the American people can rally behind. But I think Hillary Clinton really hated the work that she had to put in to campaign for the presidency, because I think she's very bad at selling herself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that she would have... Like, she was very eager to work as the president, and I think she was actually very eager to improve the conditions for, like, working-class Americans and for, you know, all Americans. So I think that that's something that I could get behind for Hillary Clinton, because even if I don't... You know, I don't think that she's a very charismatic person. She's not someone
that's important. I mean, not interrupting you, but just saying, you know, when you look at the whole picture, okay, now you got to have some charisma. Donald Trump, even if whether you liked him or didn't like, he could draw you in, okay? Even if you hated him, he still could draw you in. And I think that's, I don't know, you all tell me. But where I sit, it seems like that is an important part of it, too, okay? Now, being able to govern and negotiate and all of that is important. But you've got to have some charisma. You've got to... Am I wrong? You all tell me. I mean, what do you think? You think I'm just barking up the wrong tree?
I think you're right. I think that I dislike the importance that we place on personality.
Voted for it. I just held my nose when I did it.
The thing is, I feel like I think Donald Trump, because he knew that, you know, he's worked in reality television, he turned the presidential election into a popularity contest, which... I dislike. I'm a fan of policy. Hillary Clinton's a fan of policy, and I think that's what made me a fan of her, because I agreed with her policies. And even if I didn't like her as a person, I'm never going to meet Hillary Clinton. I'm never, like,
oh,
I know.
Right?
I mean,
that'd be cool.
Maybe I met Obama. I shook hands with Obama.
Okay,
I went to
see?
This is. I'm going to use this to brag about me meeting Obama, because it was the coolest moment of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's what made me so sad, actually, when I was watching Hillary Clinton's concession speech, because I went to a rally that Obama was holding with Stevie Wonder performing beforehand in the days before the election. And there's a group of Mexican Americans for Clinton that came in riding horses and looked like a mariachi band.
Uh-huh.
And I've also attended a Trump rally, just from a historical perspective.
I remember you told us that, yeah.
And there was just so much energy and so much diversity. And I think that's what made the like results of this election so impactful for me personally, because I know so many Americans put their hopes in Hillary Clinton, and they viewed her in some degree as like their champion and their defender against, you know, forces in the U.S. that would maybe prefer to not see them there. So I don't know, to see all of that hope misplaced was super demoralizing for me.
Okay, that's all right. I mean, yeah, cool.
Well, I do think Clinton's been kind of in the realm of not having to work with public opinion for a little too long. I think she kind of forgot that not everyone, you know, studies foreign policy and studies political policy all day. Not everyone knows that about her policy and about Donald Trump's policy. Mm-hmm. You know, she has to market herself, not mm-hmm. just her policy, because not everyone's going to pay attention to her policy.
Right.
And so, yeah.
I think also that Hillary Clinton's policy speaks a lot to her experience in more, I don't know, like the broader sense of government. She's done things that have gone for the country as a whole and not to specific groups of people. Like, I mean, working with foreign policy, of course, that's really important and something that's absolutely crucial. But I think that to most Americans, that isn't the most important things in their lives. Or she worked with mm-hmm. healthcare and whatnot. But because, I mean, I think a lot of that legacy was mm-hmm. overshadowed by Obamacare. And people obviously feel very strongly about that. But I think that Donald Trump, he appealed to a lot of the issues that rural voters were facing, that people who had never voted before were facing. He appealed to, I think, a sense of nostalgia for the quote-unquote good old days. And I think that in trying to move forward, I think Hillary Clinton forgot what was really important to most Americans.
That indeed could have been. And I think really what all of you are saying is, in reality, what happened. I mean, it's a combination of all those things, you know, put together. I'm looking at the clock. We're going to take a break first. You're tuned in to 411 Team, and I have the Common Sense Team, and we are looking at the presidential election, talking about President-elect Donald Trump. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this is the Common Sense Teen, and we are looking at the election results, presidential election results. What is the significance of it? What does it say? What message does it send? What does it say to you? Looking at you,
yeah,
Sarah.
Yeah, I know. I haven't talked in a little while, but I'll sort of take it from my point of view, I guess. I think I haven't said anything because talking about the election results, like, adds to my worsening depression. And, like,
we
just
don't want to make it worse.
I've become so numb at this point to it. It's just, like, when I bring it up to my mom, she's just like, please stop. It's just, like, it's so, to me, this, it shows just something awful, I think. I mean, he's backing off on a lot of things he said that he was going to do, which,
yeah, he's not
going
to put her in jail.
Yeah, so seems like, okay, so we know maybe something good will come from this, mm-hmm. maybe, if we're lucky. But I can't see any optimism in it, and I don't know if that's because I'm a pessimist, but it just
maybe you're just a realist.
It just brings me down, and mm-hmm. it just looks awful for just, it just is.
Well, it is what it is, huh?
Mm.
What do you see? Huh. I mean, what does it say? What is it? I mean, what does it say to you when you look at Donald Trump, who is president-elect? You look at all the kinds of statements that he made. Regardless, he is president-elect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the significance?
I definitely understand that there are some people that, you know, listened to his statements and thought, oh, that's exactly what I believe. You know, I'm going to vote for you because you said that. But I think there were also a lot of people that were just really down on the American government and wanted someone who wasn't in government at all, and they didn't care who it was as long as they weren't in government. And also, it really speaks to the importance of voter turnout, because the reason that Donald Trump won was because of low voter turnout in urban areas and things like that, because people didn't want to vote for the lesser of two evils, as it was called.
Right.
So I think that kind of helped him. But it's encouraging that he's backing off on a lot of these things, and it seems like he's, like he said, he would leave the pillars of Obamacare and things like that. He understands that some of his statements are just not realistic at all.
It's just rhetoric.
Right. So I think that's a good thing. I'd rather a hypocrite than, you know, someone who
absolute fool, huh?
Keeps trying to go through with the things that he said he would do.
I think that I've been paying pretty close attention to his cabinet posts specifically, and that has not been a great sign of optimism for me.
Oh, my God.
There are some that aren't so bad. I don't mind. Like, I think Nikki Haley, she's not my favorite person, but she's, I think she'll be, like, an okay, rational ambassador to the United Nations. She also went against Trump, which tells me that she's got some sort of sense of, some, like, sense of rationality in her. Whereas, like, Jeff Sessions for Attorney General.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, That is just demoralizing and depressing. I also really hope that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, like,
alive
forever for the next 4 years. But I think
she's old.
Yeah, I just hope she's immortal. That's just a surprise.
She probably is. You know, she'll stay in that office as long as she physically can.
Yeah.
Notorious RBG.
Something that really concerns me is that he's not taking security briefs like he should. Even Mike Pence is taking security briefs. And as, like, a queer American, I am no friend to Mike Pence, but at least he's doing that. You know, at least he's acting like someone who's going to be vice president, whereas Trump just doesn't consider it worth his time. And I think that is a huge issue to me, because if Mike Pence ends up running this presidency, that is not going to be good for me.
I think on Donald Trump, like, planning on leaving the pillars of Obamacare intact, I think something that's very significant in that is that he's a fan of allowing people with pre-existing conditions to still be guaranteed coverage, but he also wants to do away with the provision that all Americans must have health care. And if you do that, then you only there's no incentive for young people who aren't sick and don't think they need health insurance to buy into health care. So I think, like, logically, that sounds like it would make prices skyrocket, so that concerns me. And as someone who's, like, has family members that have Obamacare and is a Floridian, because, like, we're the state where the most people are signed up for Obamacare. So I think, especially within our state, it's very significant, and personally to me that is. Also, I think Urbella is his name, the man who Donald Trump is thinking of appointing as the head of the EPA. Okay. He's for a research paper that I did maybe a year ago, he pioneered the theory of global warming alarmism. And he thinks that, you know, people are just alarmed and they want to cause a fuss over nothing. But, you know, I think global warming is very alarming. So that, I think some people think that because he's rolling back from his statements, that means that, you know, maybe he will be rational when he's going to be the president. Maybe the 70-year-old man will change. But what scares me is, I know we had people think that he'll be willing to listen to others and he'll be willing to listen to influence. But we've seen a president who was willing to listen to influence within George W. Bush. And it depends on you who you have whispering in your ear. Because if we have someone like Mitt Romney who says, like, tone down the crazy, maybe try to be a standard Republican, I think we
could
wait
through. But do
you think
he's really considering Romney?
I hope so.
What world are we living
in? Rudy Giuliani is Secretary of State. I have, like, serious concerns for this country.
I know, but Romney was a fierce critic.
Oh, yeah. I think
so was Nikki Haley.
And you know, yeah, she was, but you know, Trump is his skin. He's thin skin. Go right in.
Well, Mitt Romney, he knows a ton about what's going on in other countries. And so I think, you know, for most people who are Republican, he would be a logical choice. But it's if he appoints Mitt Romney, I think it'll be a good step forward for Donald Trump because of how fierce of a critic Mitt Romney was to him. And but obviously still there's a lot of work to do, but I think Mitt Romney would be a really good addition to his cabinet because of the knowledge
he brings.
He does
have some credibility, at least.
Yeah, and he's a standard Republican.
Well, you know, when we look at all of this, I guess my question is the system broken? And the reason I ask is even though Trump, president-elect, he got the electoral votes, but the last time I read, Clinton had 2.2 million more votes.
Yeah.
Now, talk to me.
So I think it's... Are we talking, like, specifically the political system? Like, which system?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the political system.
I don't want to go out there and say, like, it's rigged and, you know, like, pull a card or something. Mm-hmm. But I think, to also annotate to my other statement before, I think it does show something about us when the popular vote gets one thing, but then the electoral votes swing another way. I don't know how I feel about the Electoral College just in general, because a lot of the times they are supposed to vote the way a state does, but sometimes they don't, and that scares me the most because it's not an accurate reflection of what the people want. It's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing, like, politicians, you can't always trust them, of course. So it's never sure that you're going to get the person that you want. And my opinion is that we take out the Electoral College altogether. No, I'm kidding.
No, but well, they've been talking about that. So, I mean,
I've heard a lot about that.
You know, maybe we should just, you know, get rid of.
But
go on.
I think that's also kind of scary, too, because then we'd be just relying on the popular vote. And then, like, it'd be easy to tell, like, how it was going to go. But then, like, we wouldn't have the thing where maybe the Electoral College vote for someone good instead of someone bad. So it's like... either way.
I mean,
I thought, Quinn, did you have something?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, the Constitution doesn't really provide for an electoral college the way we have it today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, less government, you know, go exactly by the Constitution, there's no electoral college. But I think that the system still isn't broken if we just have it not winner take all. You know,
okay.
Just split the votes. I mean, there are a couple of states that still do that. I know Nebraska does that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we just had the vote split, then it would be a lot closer to the popular vote than it already
Maine
is.
Maine does it, too.
Yeah.
Nebraska.
Yeah.
I know Nebraska does it based on congressional district. And on one hand, that sounds kind of good to me. But on the other hand, I'm very aware of, like, corruption and the...
Gerrymandering?
Gerrymandering.
Yeah, sorry about that.
And I know that that's typically done for partisan reasons. My thing about the Electoral College is, like, personally, I don't agree with it at all. Even if we are going to keep the Electoral College, I think that it needs, or that it should be fixed in order to make it more fair. The way it is, like, I read this post and I looked at it myself, so I'm pretty sure it's accurate. But, like, Wyoming has, like, 750,000 people and three electoral votes, so that's, like... I can't math.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one vote for 200,000 people, right. A little bit less than that.
Uh-huh.
California has 55 electoral votes and like 25 million people. And it ends up being to where a vote in Wyoming is worth 3.5 times one vote in California.
Yeah,
I don't think that that's very fair or democratic.
The separation isn't fair at all.
And I understand the purpose of like... catering to rural states, I really do. I mean, my family is from Iowa and Alabama, so I understand that, like, we need to give people in rural states a voice. Especially, like, I know in Iowa, that's where a lot of the industrial unrest is occurring right now. Well, not so much, but especially, it is one location where it is occurring. And I know that in states like Iowa and whatnot, it would be really harmful if they didn't really have a voice in order to fight for policy that benefits them. But I think that the cap on the electoral votes is kind of rigged because populations, like...
increase.
...change and are increasingly concentrated, and it's not fair to give Wyoming a vote just because Wyoming wants a vote. But I think that no electoral college is going to happen within the next few years, maybe if ever, just because I think that the electoral college is something that people know And I think there would be a lot of resistance to change.
And change is always hard.
I'm ready to get, like, hate mail from Wyoming now. Like, telling us how they deserve their electoral votes.
I love Wyoming, but they get too much power for their vote.
Yeah. It's Wyoming.
I agree. No, I think that the Electoral College, like Ollie said, I think they give inflated, preference and inflated voter representation to countries. Sorry.
Try your best.
Yeah, states that have, less people. And I feel like if the United States wants to be, a representative of democracy across, the global stage, it makes sense to honor the popular vote. And I understand that's not going to happen now. I think Donald Trump was smart to campaign the way that he did, especially, I know people thought he was crazy for going into states like Wisconsin and Michigan, mm-hmm. that he was able to turn due to the rules of the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. So I'm not asking for a recount. I don't think it's going to change anytime soon, but I think it's an outdated system that we could do without.
Well, they are having a recount, aren't they?
Yeah, in Michigan, I think, or Wyoming.
It was Wisconsin.
Wyoming. Jill Stein is the initiator, Green Party.
I've heard.
Okay, and then Clinton went along with it, and they said, but she, I think, if I remember correctly, she really, it was the Green Party that initiated.
Yeah. Jill Stein did. Yeah.
Well, it was the states that it wasn't clear about were Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, that's right.
Wisconsin was the only state that I think had, like, a close enough margin where they were like, we need to recount these votes. But Michigan and Pennsylvania have been kind of stingy on it. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, I think, definitely should recount their votes because most of their stuff is electronic, so it's the most likely to result from fraud or voter hacking.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, is a really big issue because if we're going to have, like, a bigot as a president for the next 4 years, I want to make sure we're sure.
Well, I think one of the things about Wisconsin was that supposedly, I remember reading this, that there were more votes than registered voters.
I know in Michigan, too, mm-hmm. they're still counting votes. And even though it's been called, I'm pretty sure they're still calling votes, but I haven't checked up on that recently. But even so, Clinton would have to flip all three states for even a possibility of victory.
Which is unlikely.
And especially in Pennsylvania, where Trump won by, like, a pretty considerable margin, I don't think that that's something that's likely or going to happen.
Yeah. Well, Trump keeps complaining or making allegations of voter fraud.
Why do it now when he won?
Yeah.
He wants to win by more.
Is that
It's like you already won.
Right.
And you already did something that no one expected you to do, but mm-hmm. he just wants to win so decisively. And
is that what it is?
I think he wants to win the popular vote, though, which is why I think he's claiming voter fraud. Because I think that him not having the popular vote has been a pretty big blow to his
confidence.
Yeah, well, not to his ego, but, I mean, I'm sure to his ego as well. But no, just to his administration in general, because the fact that you are this person in a position of power that is already so opposed, and you are going to be in this power, but you don't have the majority of votes, that's kind of demoralizing, and I don't think that it speaks the best of his strengths as a politician.
Do you think it's a tactic, and he could be using that as distraction to take off, attention off other things, too? I mean, if you keep calling voter fraud, just like we're talking about it, but really, maybe, we need to be looking at his business dealings, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, and other things. And if he, if he focuses and calls out allegations of voter fraud, that's a way to distract you. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's really alarming that, we've had an election that's lasted for 2 years, even though it seems
mm-hmm.
I don't remember a time before the 2016 election. But in all of that time, we've never, fully discussed how his business dealings will affect his presidency and how they could possibly inform his decisions. And it's just, I don't understand how he managed to skirt around that issue. And also, the issue of him still not releasing his taxes as a president-elect is so alarming, but
of course, you don't have to. There's no rule, law, or anything that says you have to that you have to release your taxes. Yeah, go on, Quinn. Feel free.
Another alarming thing is that he never really said that he would accept it if Clinton became president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is really, really alarming to me. But even now, you know, it's almost like his call of voter fraud kind of, and it always seems like it initiated the recount in Wisconsin. Like, mm-hmm. Jill Stein got the idea from him saying, mm-hmm. voter fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's something inherently childish about the way that Donald Trump is conducting himself. Just in tweeting, Fidel Castro dead with an exclamation point. Which just, like, even, I understand not liking Fidel Castro, that's a fairly reasonable position to take, but just doing it with such, like, vigor, mm-hmm. and almost, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. as if he took personal pride in it, mm-hmm. I thought was silly. And also, just getting into an argument with the cast of Hamilton.
Oh my gosh.
Which
oh,
is it's
yeah.
such a distraction.
Yeah. I mean, what was that all about?
All right, more alarming things, because I totally read that. Do you want to talk about that, or? Okay, so... Sorry, I got excited about it because I read this whole article. So,
and I might have to interrupt you. Keep on.
Basically,
we'll
what sort of happened was the person who's playing Burr. Thank you. Right now, totally like burned Mike Pence,
mm-hmm.
and it was
what's his name? Brandon Victor Dixon.
Dixon.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
He's I love him, but mm-hmm. he burned him, and like not really. I don't know if it was intentional. It was intentional, but it wasn't like. Like, it was, like, low-key, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Donald Trump went crazy over it.
I
and, like,
know.
People went crazy. I saw this one tweet that was...
Hold your thought.
Yes.
Hold your
okay.
thought. We're going to come back. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. What's the 411? 411 Teen. And you were talking about Hamilton and Brandon Victor Dixon and his plea really for equality to Pence.
Sorry, I get really excited
ahead.
About that sort of thing. I mean, I really love Hamilton, like a lot of people at this table. But basically, Trump blew up on Twitter about it and asked them to apologize. And I've seen things going around like, oh, I wish Hamilton was still a musical just like it was before and not about politics. And someone someone commented, it's about American politics. And it's just so funny. It's just, Hamilton isn't just a musical about American politics. It represents, like, it's a reflection of who we are today and how we're trying to speak out against what's happening. And... I mean, it's going to stay that way. And I think that's what they were trying to get across, is that you're going to be president, but you're not going to be able to change us and just burn Mike Pence in general because I don't like him. So,
I mean, it certainly provoked a lot of criticism from Trump. Yes, yes, don't worry.
I think just to clarify on, like, burning Mike Pence. No, it's fine. It's just he basically stated that the diverse members of Hamilton were slightly alarmed by the Trump presidency,
mm-hmm.
and it's a reality.
Yeah.
I can say it without flinching, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But how the Trump presidency may affect them, and they called upon Mike Pence to consider the well-being of all Americans. And that's a very mm-hmm. reasonable thing to ask your vice president to consider. So I think he was perfectly within his rights to say that. I also think that
they need to apologize?
No. That's a distraction. And I think things like this, they encourage Americans to disengage from the political sphere entirely because it's so demoralizing to hear these stories over and over and over again and to hear about Donald Trump's exploits every day on the 24-hour news cycle. And that's scary because I think if you have a president that's discouraging Americans from monitoring him and from participating actively in politics, then there are things that they might miss. So I know a lot of people are encouraging Americans to donate to the American Civil Liberties Union. And also, I know, like, I personally work with the International Rescue Committee a lot, which works in Tallahassee with, you know, like, providing services to refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm donating. I'm trying to help those, you know, organizations that could combat the negative effects of a Trump presidency. So I don't know. Something that scares me about this election is that it's been going on for so long and it's just beaten so many people down to the point where they're, you know, they're encouraged to not be aware and to not hold power accountable anymore because it's too hard. And that worries me.
Well, what are the negative effects of a Trump presidency, as you all see them? No, don't everybody jump at once.
I don't.
Whoever, no, go for it.
Go.
You don't have
to.
It's okay. I think what disappoints me is what it says about the American people. And it seems like it's such just an open repudiation of what I see as the progress of the Obama administration, especially when it comes to climate change and
climate change. What's that?
it's I feel like we're having debates now that
Chinese.
That's something that, like, that's so discouraging to hear. And I feel like we're having debates that we shouldn't be having, things that I thought we had settled as American people. Mm-hmm. And just to have in 2016 a president that is endorsed by the KKK is mind-boggling to me. And I know even if he's disavowed the Ku Klux Klan, which is so, like, the fact that we have a presidential candidate and no president-elect that has had to disavow the Klan because he's receiving such enthusiastic support from them is upsetting. But the fact that white nationalists, white supremacists, and the KKK are so, you know, energized by the Trump presidency, it's just, there's obviously something there, and it speaks to anti-immigrant sentiments in the U.S. that have been fermenting for a while. So I think it clues me into the reality of the nation that I'm living in. I still love America. I still think it's, you know, fantastic. I think it's great already. But I think it's really forcing me to realize that there are people in the U.S. that, like, fundamentally disagree on things that I thought weren't disagreeable with me.
Okay. Quinn.
One thing that I think is negative is that, like Hannah said, a lot of people that disagree with Trump, actually a lot of Democrats in general, mm-hmm. seem to be disconnecting from American politics in general. Like, uh-huh. all the protests that are going on where they're saying, you know, he's not my president.
Right.
It's like, well, he is your president.
He is.
So I feel like one really negative effect could be that the only people that are participating actively in politics are Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. And that would not be good. So I think that one thing I hope the Democratic Party does, and, you know, just because we need this kind of conflict resolution in America, is I hope that they continue to actively work in politics. You know, I hope they revamp their leadership because I think they need new leadership. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they try to work in the governmental system to combat what they don't, what they disagree with,
right.
but they accept him as their president. That's what I hope.
Right.
I want to ditto everything Hannah said because it was.
Thank you.
I believe in all of it. I want to touch on what Quinn said too, but I'll just go with Hannah's comment first. I think what scares me the most is it's going to have such a profound impact on all of the people that I know, of all of my friends who are minorities, of. Just everyone who's LGBT and women, and just because there's going to be change in a bad way. I think the one specific thing that just won't get off my mind is Mike Pence's idea for conversion therapy, which I can see you making a face over there. Finding people on the internet who are gay and I can't just say gay, LGBT, because that's just, yeah, it's not big enough. And forcing them to go through conversion therapy, and all of us are just saying, LOL, what a joke. Because it just...
It's like they don't have a clue.
Yeah, it's
They're
like...
They're clueless.
Can I add to that real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Something else that really scares me about Mike Pence with LGBTQ community is he wants to stop funding for HIV/AIDS treatment because it relates to immoral behaviors, which is just ridiculous. It's something that should have happened in the 1980s, not the 2000s, and he has been given the opportunity to take back that statement multiple times, and he has refused every time, and that is something
that
scares me.
That's a terrifying thing, and honestly, I'm looking at this like, how am I going to live the next 4 years? What's going to change for me, and what's going to change for everybody that I know? And Quinn, you kind of brought up a harsh reality. It kind of just hit me in the face. I've been that Democrat for like the past weeks or so. He's not my president, and I don't want to think that he's my president. But mm-hmm. then you said, if we keep saying that, the Republicans, bad Republicans, are going to take over.
Thank you.
They're not all bad. are going to start mm-hmm. taking over parts of the government, and they're going to change things in the views of Donald Trump. And I think, yeah, the only way to stop that is to get ourselves out there.
I think with the phrase "not my president," I understand that they're trying to say that, you know, Donald Trump doesn't represent me, and it's not a phrase that I oppose. I think you can recognize that the president of your nation doesn't represent you, but still have faith in your nation and still want to work towards positive change within it. So I don't think it's the best, you know, phrased statement, but I understand the sentiment. I also recognize that a Trump presidency, like, he's not going to, you know, nuke ISIS within his first 100 days. There's legal precedent that he has to abide by to some degree. Mm-hmm. I think that even with a Republican Congress, I think that he can be made reasonable. But we've also been learning this week, and I don't like making this comparison, but about Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler. And those same things have been said about, you know, strong men mm-hmm. repeatedly, and conservatives have believed they could control them, and that hasn't happened. But something that really frightens me is the concept of a Muslim registry that's actually being talked about in serious terms. By
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And the thing that scares me is on Fox and Friends, a Trump surrogate, they were talking about the legal precedent for this, and the precedent that they referenced was Japanese internment camps,
yeah.
which is one of the darkest pages of American history. Yeah, and I know Ronald Reagan, like, apologized for internment in the 1980s and offered mm-hmm. a $200,000 resettlement with
Mm-hmm.
The concept of resettling, that confuses me because it's something you can't really resettle.
Right.
But we've already acknowledged that that was, you know, like, a grave mistake on the part of the American government, and that's something that worries me. And I'm not a Muslim American, but I have Muslim Americans that are friends. I have a lot of Ethiopians are Muslim Americans,
mm-hmm.
so I think it's important to realize that the Trump presidency isn't going to bring the apocalypse, but to look out for the people that are left most vulnerable by it.
Yeah. On one hand, I want to agree with what Quinn said, because I think that every dollar that is spent on a protest is a dollar that could be spent donated to the ACLU, the NAACP, the Trevor Project,
mm-hmm.
Other organizations mm-hmm. that actually protect the people that are going to need that protection most. But on the other hand, I want to disagree with it, because I think that even though the phrase "not my president" might not be the greatest, the idea of a protest against a president is, I think, or at least I don't think it plays that big of a role now, but especially when Trump had just won the election, I think that it was a very big show of solidarity against Trump against a Trump presidency. I think it kind of demonstrated that people aren't willing to just lie back mm-hmm. and take whatever he gives them. And I think that in the coming years, that will be important for Trump to know that he can't just step on us whenever he wants.
Just to clarify, yeah, I completely agree with that. What I meant was that just protesting against him in general, mm-hmm. I don't think is a good idea. If he does something as a president that is completely wrong, absolutely, yes. Or if he even discusses doing it, then we should protest.
Well, you know what he's discussing doing? I wanted to bring this up. He calls to strip flag burners of their citizenship or either put them in jail. I mean,
I actually just want to say that in 2011, he tweeted that flag burning was a perfectly acceptable way to
Isn't that something?
yeah, to protest the government.
Yeah. Well, he's not saying that now.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. I hate that he's such a flip-flopper.
Mm-hmm.
Flip-flop.
No, I think with that, too, and just with his beliefs, like, first he was for abortion, now he's against it.
Right.
I was watching the 60 Minutes interview with him a few weeks ago, and he was, like, he was talking about how he would appoint Supreme Court justices that would overturn Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
But when asked about gay marriage, whether he would overturn gay marriage, he's like, it's already been decided. We can't overturn
it.
Which I just think is ridiculous because it literally just goes against what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that.
But, yeah, go ahead. All right.
I think him threatening to repeal the citizenships of Americans that burn flags speaks to his lack of understanding of the American legal system, because citizenship isn't something that you can repeal. That's something that's already been decided, and there's legal precedent for that. So it's just, you know, mumbling.
But the rhetoric.
It's scary rhetoric.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think something that I'm noticing is we're laughing a lot less in this recording than I think we have in others, because it's not funny anymore. Mm-mm. I think you have a man.
I mean, you have somebody who appealed on hate and bigotry
and fear
and misogyny, you know, and fear and anger. That's how he ran.
I think some of the problems that he brought up with the way the system as it currently works were legitimate. I think his claim to drain the swamp has been, you know, kind of undermined by his, you know, touting of Rudy Giuliani, who I see as being very swampy, as a possible Secretary of State, which scares me. He scares me as a man. But,
how can we have somebody who really does not believe in climate change? You know, I just read where Alaska was melting away. I mean, I just read this today.
It is.
Okay? And the North Pole. And you telling me you don't believe in climate change?
Well, there's a lot of Republicans, and I'm not one of these Republicans, but there's a lot of Republicans that...
What did they think it is?
Well, they don't support it because it hurts big businesses. And, you know, a lot of Republicans are part of big businesses, but which you have to worry about climate change, because if you don't worry about climate change, there's no big business to run because there's no planet.
Thank you.
So, I mean, you can't just say climate change is a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually attack it and acknowledge it. And I think that's what he doesn't realize, is that people all around the world are now looking at America.
Because, and laughing.
Yeah.
Look at those fools.
Or crying, because they really... He pulled out of that one meeting, that one summit that was going to happen around the world.
He says he's going to pull out.
You never know. But a lot of people, like, I know India was really mad about that, because they really need... They really want to work on climate change.
Oh, I'm just speaking. I know he's also mentioned that he would repeal the Paris Peace Accords, and you can't repeal a multinational deal that we already have a 4-year commitment. So for 4 years, at least, we'll have to, you know, operate in accordance to that. But I think the Trump presidency and the Trump candidacy throughout the election has kind of relied on the repudiation of facts. And I really like objective truth. I'm a very big fan of knowing what's going on. So it's just, I don't know. I feel like we're in for a very confusing and very tumultuous 4 years. I hope it goes well. I hope his presidency is amazing. I hope he defies all of my expectations. But I think I'm trying to be optimistic, but also very cautious and very alert.
But what about, you know, there's so many things we could talk about. What about his ties, you know, his business ties with foreign governments? I mean, is this a problem at all? His own personal business tie? Do you all see that as an issue? Sarah's so cute. Sarah's like...
if you're talking about his, like, the business that he's running, like, right now as president-elect, then... Then definitely, in New York, in his Trump Tower buildings, he's not only collecting security to protect his family that are there, he's also considering passing it down to his children so that he still has a voice, and trying to get them access to things in the U.S. government. And it's just so wild. How are we letting this happen? Like,
that's what I'm talking about. Those kinds of things, that he seems like he's just straight ahead, and he's doing what he wants to do, and he's not listening to anything or anybody unless they're whispering the wrong thing in his ear.
And he's one of those people with the incredible charismatic talent to make people not realize it.
But he lies so much. I mean, I've heard, you know, comments that he made, and then they'll come back and say, not true, that's
yeah.
not happening,
oh my gosh.
You know.
I pray for objective truth in America.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But I hope it works out.
I guess basically that's it. for this edition of 411 Teen. I mean, what else can we say?
Good luck to America. I believe in you. Pray for Hillary. I hope she makes it through. Pray for her.
We have to work with Trump, even if we don't like it.
Okay, well, to my listening audience, you need to tune in same time, same place to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.